Richard Collins, tell me about your choice.
Derek, the book I have chosen is entitled The Most Perfect Thing, Inside and Outside a Bird's Egg. Its author is Tim Burkhead, who was Professor of Behaviour and Evolution at the University of Sheffield.
I was watching a wildlife television programme and the presenter, much loved and respected presenter, gave this spinning like a top explanation for the guillemot's egg shape. And that spinning like a top explanation had been dismissed 100 years ago, so I was a bit shocked. And as somebody who's been preoccupied with educating students, the idea that somebody on television, incredibly influential, could misinform the public kind of touched a nerve with me. It made me think, well, actually, nobody's really looked at why guillemot eggs are this shape. So I started to look again. And the key study was published originally in German with a very brief English summary. And people had used that English summary. So I paid a German-speaking colleague in the university here to translate the whole paper. It was a nightmare because it was a huge paper and it cost a fortune. But it revealed that the experiments that had been conducted by this Swiss ethologist, Beat Chans, and his colleagues, were not quite as robust as the summary statement seemed to imply. And it made me realise that here was a research opportunity. We could start to look at this seriously in a bit more detail and with the benefit of many, many more years of kind of knowledge and methodology and so on. So that was the starting point. If you're going to do that, you have to know a lot about eggs. So I started to read widely about eggs. And then I kind of realised that nobody had ever written about eggs from a biological perspective. And there was a good reason for that. The idea of people collecting eggs, for most of us, is anathema. So basically, the topic of eggs was what I call the forbidden area of ornithology. So some conservation organisations won't even publish a photograph of an egg or a bird's nest because they're so terrified that this might cause a resurgence of egg collecting, which it won't, of course. And in fact, when I wrote my book, part of my motivation was to try to break through this kind of cultural roadblock that said you don't study eggs. So there is a huge resistance to eggs. And really my motivation was to show people that eggs were wonderful, the most perfect thing, fascinating, worthy of study, lots of questions still remaining to be answered. And so that was the motivation for writing that book. The reason for focusing to some extent on guillemots is that I've studied guillemots since the 1970s. I'm passionately involved in guillemots, and they have the most extreme form of egg and coloration of egg of any species, certainly in Britain. And so it was a perfect combination of those two things working together.
Why do some birds lay only one egg while others lay several?
What you're asking relates to what's called Lack's hypothesis. David Lack was the 20th century's greatest ornithologist, and I was fortunate to have him as my supervisor, at least for a few months before he unfortunately died. And Lack's main research interest was precisely the question that you're asking. Why do some birds lay one egg, whereas something like blue tits lay 15 or 16 eggs? And the answer is that birds are designed by natural selection to produce the maximum number of offspring that they are capable of doing, which is usually determined by the food supply available to the chicks. Something like a great auk, which we have an egg here, they just laid one egg. That is because the food that that great auk chick needed was a long way out to sea, and the maximum number of chicks that a great auk could safely rear was one. If you're a blue tit living in a bit of oak woodland surrounded by caterpillars on the oak leaves, you can easily raise 12, 13, 14, 15 chicks. And so each species has evolved a reproductive rate that maximises its output. So that's why you have differences between species in the number of eggs that they lay.
You mentioned blue tits there. Now, the subject that comes up is calcium. Mm-hmm. If you lay one egg, you will get by on the minimum amount of calcium that you need to collect for the egg. Whereas if you're going to lay 10 or 12 eggs, you're going to have an awful lot of calcium to collect. And calcium is a sort of scarce commodity, I gather, in birds generally. Doesn't this offset the advantages of, or does it?
I think if birds had been incapable of finding enough calcium to produce 16 eggs in Bluetit's case, then it wouldn't have evolved. In something like a seabird, like a guillemot or a great auk, they're digesting fish and digesting all the bones. There's no shortage of calcium. And in fact, these two species, great auk and guillemot, lay the thickest shell relative to egg size of any bird species. That's because the egg is laid on a bare rock surface and it gets knocked around a lot, so it has to be very robust. If you're a blue tit looking to produce the calcium for a clutch of 16, you have to find snail shells or some other similar source of calcium. And they seem to be very good at that. And one of the questions I pose in my book is, how do birds find calcium? And I've asked calcium physiologists this question: can you smell calcium? And I think perhaps you can. I mean, it would be a very easy thing to test in captivity. You know, you just hide calcium at the time when birds need it in little boxes, and some would be controls and some would be experimental with the calcium in there. And you could tell whether the bird was capable of smelling it. Certainly, if you kept birds in captivity during the breeding season, they have an appetite, a real appetite for calcium right at the time when they're forming the shell. And what something like a blue tit would do would be to go around on the woodland floor, find broken snail shells or sometimes fragments of bone, and they pack their gullet with calcium the night before they're producing the egg, because the shell would then be made the next day.
The cliffs of seabird colonies are white, more or less, from calcium, are they?
There's a lot of calcium excreted by seabirds. They probably ingest too much because, as I say, they're digesting all the bones.
Thank you very much indeed, Richard Collins and Professor Tim Burkett. Fascinating stuff.